Welcome to episode 15 of the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and on this episode, I cover the November 2017 Cake International Show at the NEC in Birmingham, UK. I've got a huge lineup of great guests from the show with so many tips and tricks to teach you. So whether you're recovering from the show yourself, plunged right into your next cake order, or gearing up for the holiday season, let's get this show started to inspire and educate you on your sugar arts journey.
Theatres as well as the demo theatres as well. All on this side, so we've got the Cake International Theatre, we've got the Cake Pro Theatre, and of course we've got over 1,500 amazing competition pieces, which officially makes Cake International the biggest cake show in the world. So ladies and gentlemen, are you ready to come on in? So Rose is going to cut the ribbon. Make sure you grab a show guide as you come in. Let's go with a 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Show!
And there you heard how the fab duo of Rosie Cake Diva and Will Torrent opened the Big Cake International Show. They also hosted the Cake Masters Awards show and several other show features. And Rosie was the host at one of the demonstration theaters, so you'll be hearing more from her throughout this podcast because she was super kind to chat with me several times over the course of the weekend. As for the competition part of the show, it's obviously a little hard for me to go into too much detail with that visual aspect of the show on this audio podcast, but I'll post photos of some of my favorite entries in the show notes, and there's bound to be lots of coverage of the top cakes in the various cake magazines coming out in the next few months. I entered the show yet again this year, this time going into the new Pushing the Boundaries category, and unfortunately I only got a certificate of merit, which is actually the worst I've ever done at this show. Not gonna lie, I was a bit disappointed at first, but then later on I realized that a lot of cakes scored lower this year across the board. In particular, on the same table as mine was an utterly amazing Freddie Mercury bust cake that was so real, you guys. It was like 100% realistic. It was like the guy was right there. It was amazing. It took my breath away. Gobsmackingly amazing work by Marta Hidalgo, and it only got a silver. As soon as I realized that, I was suddenly a lot happier with my certificate of merit. Also, in talking to the judge, he agreed with me that this Pushing the Boundaries category wasn't well-defined, because a lot of us who entered it had different ideas of what that meant. I was hoping it meant they would give points for developing new techniques, but they didn't, and the judge basically said they didn't like my piece specifically because of the elements that made up the flexible edible stained glass technique. I made a dress out of that stuff, which I'd only ever done in two dimensions before. I mean, I've wrapped flat bits around a cake, and you can learn how to do that in my ebook on the subject, which is available on the Eat the Evidence website, and I'll link to that in the show notes as well. But basically, I took that flat technique and literally pushed its boundaries into three dimensions to make a 3D dress of it on a dress form made out of Rice Krispie treats and fondant. But he said they'd seen dress cakes before, so that wasn't pushing the boundaries at all. And other friends of mine in that category heard a lot of conflicting feedback, so I think everyone involved at this point agrees that that category needs to be more carefully defined in future years. Still, I was polite in talking to the judge even when I disagreed with him, because, as I and others keep saying on the show, just because you don't do as well as you hoped at a show doesn't mean you get to be rude about it. Judges work hard, and you can have a difference of opinion with them, but still thank them for their efforts and move on. So, moving on. Because to be honest, the competition wasn't even the biggest part of my weekend by far. Seeing what was new and interesting in the cake world and learning from some of the greatest demonstrators on the planet were the real highlights for me. I was no sooner in the door on Friday morning than I found Chef Nick Lodge showing off his new Katie Sue Designs molds.
Hello, Nick.
Hi, how are you? Good to see you.
Tell me about your new line.
Well, we have a new line. I'm very excited. It's Nicholas Lodge Collection by Katie Sue Designs. So it actually launches on the 13th of November. So it's a very much a winter holiday sort of theme. So pine cones and cinnamon sticks and all those things we think about for Christmas. So, yes, I'm super excited about it. Having a fun time here at Cake International.
Where is it sold?
Globally, through, you know, internationally, so through in the US, and then obviously here in Katy Sue, starting November 13th, so worldwide.
But in your shop in the US?
Yes, yeah, we're previewing them next weekend at our holiday open house in Atlanta. So, I'm taking stock back with me.
Well, congratulations on the new line.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right after talking to Nick, I plonked myself down front and center in one of the demonstration theaters to see my dear friend, the amazing Dawn Parrott, do a demo with her Royal Icing line that now comes in red and black aside from the regular white. But since you can still only buy that here in the UK, she and Rosie Cake Diva talked about how to make your own royal icing, and Dawn had this tip to share.
One thing I will tell you not to use is don't use the carton egg whites. A lot of people try to buy the egg whites that are in the carton. There's a lot of water in that. And water is literally like the enemy of royal icing, so you can never get the consistency or the strength that you want. The other thing is if you use egg whites, you want to separate the egg whites the night before and let them sit in the fridge. It actually helps in the strength.
Dawn said she got that tip from Sir Eddie Spence himself. Sir Eddie was at the show, and a lot of people were so happy to get to meet him, and we all gave him a standing ovation during the Cake Masters Awards. I know Dawn in particular was thrilled to meet him, and if you go to her Facebook profile right now, which you should totally do anyway because you need to follow Dawn to see her Friday Lives where she presents free decorating lessons, you'll see her banner pic is her with Sir Eddie, and there's just so much joy and love and talent in that one photo that it will warm your heart. But back to Dawn's demo. She also had an important tip about piping dots with royal icing, especially for competition pieces.
But the big important thing is you always want to have a paintbrush that's got a little bit of water on it. You never want to have any points. So whenever you lift off or you blend in, you can take that paintbrush and just blend in ever so gently. You never want to see anything sharp on a royal icing piece. It should look very soft and very delicate. So like when you pipe a dot, over in my side of the world, in North America, I judge pretty much every cake show that we have, and my number one pet peeve is points on dots. It's the easiest fix. It's something you should never do because the dots should be nice and smooth and round, and we see all these things sticking off the side of the cake.
And after Dawn's demo, here's what Rosie had to say.
Rosie, what did you learn from Dawn?
I've learned so much. I actually was waiting for this one because royal icing is one of those where I do struggle with the consistency, and she's answered so many questions. I love her.
Yes.
I love the fact that she's got a ready mix because I think for beginners, and I love working with beginners, I think that taking that consistency and that sort of unknown out of it makes a huge difference because people can literally pick it up and pipe. I am getting some. This will encourage me to do more without a shadow of a doubt.
Next up was Zoe Hopkinson of Zoe's Fancy Cakes, who demonstrated her method of face modeling. Zoe's got a great YouTube channel full of amazing free tutorials, and I'll post a link to that in the show notes. Here she is in her demo talking about pricing considerations between various levels of complexity in figures.
But yeah, the more detailed it is, the more I price. But instead of just telling them one price, I will give them options. So I'll say, well, you know, if you want this style figure, it's this much. This one, this much. Because first, if you go in with quite a high price, if you go in with a big high price, they just think that you're ripping them off. Whereas if you give them options and say, well, actually, no, that's the more advanced one. That's right, it's a higher price. Or you can have this more basic one, which is slightly simplified, it's a lower price. They start to understand a little bit more about what you're charging and why. So when I'm doing figures, you know, it might be that actually it's this amount for one, but if you want two figures, you're paying this much. If you want three figures, it's this much. Okay, so they can see why the pricing is there. You don't have to cost every little thing on the cake and show them. But I just find that rather than sort of saying, that's ridiculous, you're making a fortune, ripping me off, I can get one in Asda, they're, you know, they'll say, oh yeah, that's fair enough. Well, somebody sent me a picture once of themselves to a bride and groom, and they asked for a price, and I told them, and they said, well, we can get that same thing in M&S for much cheaper. Hold on, M&S doesn't sell a personalised bride and groom that look like them. So I said, yeah, it's fine, you can go get it from them. And then a few months later, they come back and like, oh, actually, can we order it from you? And I said, no.
You can tell they're a bit too twisted, but it is the truth. People don't realise just how much goes into it. But it's artwork, isn't it? This is especially beautiful artwork.
It is, you have to bear in mind who your customers are and what they want to spend. And, you know, if you've got somebody who doesn't want to spend a lot, you know, that's fair enough, but they can't get as much for that money.
Zoe also had some important advice we all need to remember, that we all need to give things a go and try out new techniques and practice to get better.
And your character, it just completely changes depending on whether you keep going with quite a fat, round face or a tall, slim face. And when you're doing them, you know, make a few and have a go with like bigger heads, smaller heads, deeper eye sockets, shallower eye sockets, see which ones you like best. And don't panic if they don't all turn out all right. Mine don't always turn out all right.
I'm glad you say that, because I think people think you get it right every time.
Yeah, no, you can't. And I make loads of these, you know. When you've made a few, it gets easier when you're first doing it. You know, you will find that you have the odd difficulty, but you're just going to keep going, keep practicing.
After her demo, Zoe and I talked a little bit about facing and overcoming challenges.
What is the scariest thing for you to make?
Anything I've not done before. To be honest, I don't do many big 3D cakes, so like sculpted cakes. When people ask for them, I'm always like, oh, yeah, I'm fully booked.
So how do you talk yourself through that then?
Usually the way I end up doing the ones I don't want to do that panic me is that I haven't taken the order. Richard will do it and he'll say, yes, she'll do it, no problem. Whereas if I read it, I go, oh no, I can't do that. But yeah, it pushes me into doing that when he says, yeah, she'll do the order. And then I've got no choice but to have a go. And really, I should sit and practice. And usually I don't. Usually it's like the day before and I'm like, oh, best get move on. And then I think, oh, we should start this earlier. But it's just kind of practice. And I think the same as anyone else. The things that I find easy, I do more of because obviously it's more enjoyable. It's less stressful. It just comes easier to you. And then you do loads, so it's even easier. But Royal Icing as well. Royal Icing is something I don't really do much of. Use it for stenciling.
Yeah, me either.
Other than that. No, I had to go with it once and I didn't get the hang of it straight away and I was just like, no.
But when you try something new and it works out, then you feel...
Yeah, it feels great. Yeah.
But and it does work out more often than you think it will, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's it. And then once you've done something, it works. See, the nice thing is then other people will say, well, you show me how to do that. How did you do that? It's brilliant. And that's what it's cute. Really glad I did that.
Zoe got drowned out by the music a bit at the end there, so just in case you couldn't hear, what she said is that after she tries something new, other people ask her how to do it, which feels great, and then she's really glad that she did it. And that's the whole thing with the title of this podcast. Eat the Evidence means when it comes to edible art, you should try new things, experiment, learn new techniques, and not every single one of them needs to be perfect, especially not on the first go. Play with edible media when you're not on deadline, and the worst case scenario is that you've got messy cake or cookies. Eat the Evidence, nobody needs to know. You know who agrees with that sentiment? None other than the great Carlos Lachetti. Here he is in his demo echoing the same advice.
So I'll show you how I do it, but that's the first attempt. So I won't get what I see here from scratch. So it's always the case of trial and error. I'm going back and forth. I don't get things from scratch. Yeah, don't think that we get things in one go. No, never. I never.
Now, when the end result does need to be as perfect as possible, here's Carlos again with a great tip on combating a problem that all decorators come across far too often, how to avoid getting little bits of fluff in your fondant or modeling paste.
And the first thing I do in the morning, before I start working with the paste, I take a small piece, rub the paste between my hands to get rid of all the fluff and dirt, and on the mat as well. That will lift all the fluff, especially when you're working in an open space full of people.
And then, of course, you keep that bit of fluff-riddled paste away from your good clean stuff, and you're good to go. My personal tip that I learned the hard way is to make sure all of your kitchen towels are white. Many years ago, when we'd redecorated our kitchen with sleek black appliances, I thought it'd be a great idea to buy black terry cloth dish towels. Huh, nope. The next time I washed my hands and dried them on those towels, I polluted all of my fondant with little black fibers. So now I've learned that black towels only come out when I'm not doing cakes, and I stick to white only when it's decorating time. And now, with Carlos's extra tip, I'm going to always keep a bit of scrap fondant around to get rid of even the white fluff when I sit down to work. Carlos also had some tips on sculpting different styles of faces to match the features of the character you're trying to evoke.
This could be like female or for kids. If you want to go for male character, it's more square. Do you remember the grandpa from Up? It's square jaw, big nose, eyes close to each other. That what makes the character look like a male character in animation. But when it's a female, you keep the eyes quite far apart from each other. You leave a bigger gap between the eyes for female character. Smaller nose, no bridge, smaller lips. Everything's tiny, yeah, for female. Male, big noses, square jaw, bigger smile, and the eyes closer to each other.
Something that Zoe, Rosie, and Carlos all agreed on is that they prefer doing cartoon faces over realistic faces. They've all found that finding specific elements that evoke the client or character they're making makes their customers happy, whereas if they try to go too realistic, then they have to get every little bit perfect. So keep in mind as you model figures, who is your audience and what are their expectations? Obviously, if you're competing in a show like Cake International and you can nail a realistic face to impress the judges, that's amazing and you should go ahead and do that. But if your client just wants to see a cartoon version of themselves in their favorite fishing hat or their beloved sports jersey or whatever, focus your attention on that specific detail and don't worry about making their face realistic. And if your figure doesn't have to look like anybody in particular, take that freedom to play around and adapt as necessary. As Carlos said in his demo, if he messes up an eye on one side, he just turns it into a pirate. After his demo, I chatted with Carlos about how he gets through challenges he's facing.
What is a difficult challenge for you and how do you get over it? Like, how would you inspire others at that hard part at 2 o'clock in the morning?
The hardest part of the creative process would be to start a new project from scratch. It's to face the unknown because there's no guideline on how to model.
So then how do you get over that hurdle?
Once I get rid of my frustration, I get back to it later, maybe a day, maybe a few hours later, a day later, depends on my mood.
So you think if someone's having trouble, they should maybe just take a break?
Yes, you should take a break, walk away from it, leave it for a while if you can, because sometimes if you need to get it done to deliver the cake, there's no other way, you need to get away with it.
But if you have the luxury of a break?
Yeah, take a break. Do something as completely different. You can water your plants or whatever you find relaxing, and then you go back to your modeling, and then it will flow.
Those of you who are actually working on a project right now, you're deep into it, you're working really hard, I want you to pause for a second. I want you to sit back, close your eyes, take a deep breath. No, come on, do this with me now. Sit back, close your eyes, deep breath. Working really hard. Stuff may not always be going well. Maybe stuff is going great. Whatever's happening, I want you now to slowly open your eyes and look at what you've made. Okay, maybe it's still got some problems. Maybe you're not done. Look at what you've made. You're so good at this. You are going to rock this cake. You are so amazing, and I have faith that you're going to get this done and everyone's going to love it. Of course, there are some folks who do nail the realistic look, because as I keep saying on this podcast, there is no wrong in cake decorating, just different styles. One of the people who is exceptionally good at realistic faces is Isabel Tamargo, who demonstrated her techniques for making eyes and mouths. She prefers to use a half sphere of ice malt for realistic eyes, and she uses modeling chocolate for her faces. Here she is talking about why she prefers those media.
We are going to use modeling chocolate. I think it's a great material to work with faces because we have enough time to work in it, to cut it, to modify, and we don't have to be worried about the paste goes dry. And also to make eyes is, for me, the best material is eyes mouth, not gum paste. I started doing the eyes with gum paste, and you know, eyes mouth is better because it's thick, so you can do the eyelids and all that, all the, and change it, and the eyes mouth don't get dirty. You can remove the paste, and it's thick, so it's better, you know, to make all the shape.
And afterwards, I asked her about her preferences for realistic faces.
You do a lot of realistic faces.
Yeah.
And I know some of the other people I was seeing other demos this morning about cartoon faces. Why do you prefer realistic?
I don't know. I just do it. I can't do cartoon faces. For me, it's too hard, but... when I see a realistic face, I just do it. For me, it's the way I do cakes. I don't know.
What's the hardest part for you to do?
Oh, for me, the eyes. I had to learn because I didn't do arts or something. I'm a psychologist, so
oh, wow.
I had to learn from zero. Yeah, and it's hard. I know that it's hard for my students also.
Do you have tips on how to make the eyes match? Because that's the hardest part for me.
Oh, yeah, symmetric.
Yes.
Yeah, it's too hard, and you have to observe and take pictures with your phone and all that, yeah, to check it.
Just checking over and over?
Yeah, you have to spend time.
Practice.
Yeah.
You practiced a lot, I bet.
Yeah, yeah. And I drew many, many faces before, you know. Yeah, I had to do it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Another expert on realistic faces, and in fact the recipient of the 2017 Cake Masters Modeling Excellence Award, is Carla Puge. And it is Puge, not Puig, as I and so many others have been saying in all of our fawning over this amazing artist.
Okay, Carla Puge.
All right, I've known of Carla for a few years, and to me she's been Puig, which is not very flattering, I'm afraid. So should we spread the word? It's Carla Puig.
Yes.
Carla shared a tip on how to help us achieve better symmetry on modeled faces.
Every time I make a thing in the face that there's two, like two cheeks, I take the amount for the two parts, and then I make a ball, and then I make like a sausage, and I cut it in the middle. This way you have the same amount for two, because if you want, put one. And in 2 hours, maybe, you make the other one, it won't be the same for sure. So this way you are sure that, imagine that this is the double one, cut it, this one reserved for the other side, but now we are making this one.
And if you should have to leave several hours in between parts, Carla says not to worry if your modeling chocolate appears to no longer match in color.
Sometimes when you add chocolate to another chocolate that is made like hours ago, sometimes the color changes a little bit. This can be for two things. One, if the chocolate that you add is darker than the ones that you have, it's because your hands are dirty, okay? So just trim it. And if it's lighter, it's because this is just fresh. I don't know the name.
Needed.
But in a few minutes or hours will be the same color, everything, okay?
Carla also shared some tips on making child faces versus adult ones.
The very important thing when you make a child face is that everything in the face has to be small and very, very round. Okay, the nose is very small. This is very important. If you put a big nose, it's not a child anymore, okay? So, and also this part, that the bridge of the nose is very flat and round, is not angled, okay? In the child, they have the forehead very big. It depends on the age, but when they are like 3 years or something like that, if you see the face, make a line just on the half, you will see that the top part is only forehead, okay? So they have the eyes, the nose, and the mouth in the bottom half, okay? So they have a very big head. They are lovely, but with a very big head. This one is a little bit more adult, and when we grow up, the parts of the face just are more separately, okay? So she has forehead, but not so much as if she was a baby.
Rosie asked Carla about the downsides of using modeling chocolate in a warmer climate, and Carla revealed the shocking truth about her home.
I don't know if anyone's asked this before, but modeling chocolate and heat in hot weather, are you still happy using modeling chocolate on its own?
I think when you use it inside a room or something like that, it's perfect, because if you are not sweating, you are living in this house, or the chocolate resists perfectly. But of course, if you put in the sun, or also inside in the house, but with a window, with a direct light, the problem is that the chocolate gets lighter. You put it in the house, but not with a very...
Not direct sunlight.
Yes.
Have you ever had a disaster with that?
Yes.
Oh, you have?
Yes.
Have you just melted a figure?
A lot.
No.
Because I have a lot of heads in my home. A lot.
So Carla's house is just full of heads, zombie heads.
And I have like an atelier, and I put all the heads there, and I just close the closet. And after the summer, I went there, and when I opened the closet, it was the worst image I've seen in my life.
Did you have a molten mess of faces?
Yes.
Just literally
and
melted faces.
And fingers and
did everything. You? One thing I would love to know, did you take a photograph?
No, but
that's such
no,
a
no.
Shame.
But I closed the closet and I leave. So if I come again, I can make.
Oh, so it's still there.
Yeah.
Oh, do we want to see that?
Yes.
Right, Carla, can we tell everybody what is your Facebook page?
Okay, Carla Puig.
Are you gonna for us get that photograph
yes.
and somehow let us see it?
Okay.
Because we would like that. Would we not like that? Just for fun. So Carla, you're gonna go back, open the closet door, and take a funny photo.
I will. Yes.
I like that.
Because honestly, who amongst us doesn't occasionally have a cupboard full of heads or drying limbs or eerily faceless penguin bodies? These are the things our families get used to when there's a sugar artist in the house. Of course, all through this podcast, I've had clips of great artists telling you how they've spent years and years practicing and honing their craft, how they had to make a lot of mistakes along the way, and take a lot of time to find their skill set and niche. Because that's how it is for most of us. And then there are people like Carla, who apparently just pick it up one day and wow us to pieces.
How long have you been doing it?
This December will be 2 years.
Sorry. Did you just say you have only been doing this for 2 years?
Yes.
Does anybody want to stab her? That's really annoying, Carla.
Thank you.
That's true. It was, yes, I think she took it as a compliment. Carla, you literally have only just been taking this up, and suddenly you're an expert, and now you are the Modelling Excellence Champion
yes,
for 2017.
Thank you so much.
But tell me something about last night. Was there a little bit of a tear in your eye?
First, I was shaking a lot, but then I just don't realize. And after this morning, like, yes, it wasn't a dream, okay? But
it's a very, very amazing achievement. And in 2 years, that kind of, I think they should have given you more than that. You should have literally got 2 awards for that. I'm very impressed.
So just to put that in perspective, at last year's Cake International show in November, Mike McCary was there, and he told me his favorite cake was one of Carla's. It was the lady in the pink dress eating cake. I've mentioned it on the show before, and I'll put another picture in show notes. I'll be putting pictures of all this stuff and all these demos in show notes, so definitely check that out after the podcast. But yes, last year, Mike McCary, the cake god.
Mike McCary, he's the cake god.
His favorite cake at the show, as he told me, was one of Carla's, so think about the math. That means she'd barely been doing that for a year. Wow. And falling somewhere in between is Sachiko Winbeal, who is known for her caricatures in fondant of real people. Sachiko's models are somewhat cartoony, but always manage to look just like her subjects. As she's mentioned on the show before, her method involves making gum paste eyes in advance that are dried hard, so she's able to manipulate them inside the fondant heads as needed without worrying about them squishing. Here's Sachiko talking to me before she did her demo on faces.
Hey Sachiko, how's your show going so far?
I'm so afraid because in front of me, Kim, she's here.
Yeah, but I suck clearly because I only got a certificate of merit. I'm so bad. You've got gold here, haven't you?
No, no. this here is really difficult and very strict.
Yeah.
And yeah, first time it was in London. I think it was just only one toothpick, but it must be all edible.
Right.
For my category.
Did you get disqualified?
Yeah, it was. Right. It was shocking. Yeah.
But how is this particular show going for you? You having a good time?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. And there's so many people. And then this is kind of like a, you know, biggest show in this world, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So if you have a chance, you should come here and then see how it looks like and then, you know, shopping. It's like a Black Friday.
Yes,
right?
It is.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And I saw that you had your 365 thing going back again. I was wondering about that.
I know. I'm so glad to bring it here. Yeah. And because, you know, supposed to be finished by this Christmas. But it's going to be postponed. So hopefully I can bring everything next year here.
Well, I mean, it's not like you have been doing anything else. You just sit on your hands not doing any shows all year or like, what? Yeah, of course you haven't had time.
Yeah, I hope so. But, you know, it's my challenge. And then just, you know, try to do practice myself. So it's good. Yeah. Oh, and also I just met Eddie Spence.
Oh.
So I think he going to come here today and then he going to meet mini Eddie.
Oh, that would be so exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what time, but... So first he just came, you know, just dropped by my booth, and then it's like, you know, Emperor is coming here, and I was like, like this. So then after this, I just made a quick, you know, like a small face, and then just gave it to them. So he's gonna meet today.
Yeah, because I saw it on Facebook. You, as always, you got him perfectly.
No.
You are so good at that. Like, I don't even know. You're like a wizard.
But thank you so much. All right, so I have to go.
I should let you go do your demo. All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
This particular demonstration of Sachiko's was a mermaid, so she modeled part of the figure's torso as well. Things got pretty giggly when she was trying to show the audience how to model the figure's breast, because even though that's an entirely legitimate part of a figure, people do in fact need to know how to sculpt well. We are all basically 12 years old. Rosie and Sachiko were both hilarious about the whole thing, so of course I had to ask Rosie about it afterwards.
Hey, Rosie. So you know I'm going to ask you, what was your favorite part of that? Come on, I know what it was.
Oh, the breasts. That was so funny. I did not see that coming at all. The fact that she literally taught us how to squeeze breasts was hilarious. Do you know what? It was a really interesting demo, and everybody was really transfixed with what she was doing and how she was doing it. Then suddenly the breasts came out. She lulled us into a complete false sense of security. And in the midst of a storm about people touching people inappropriately, we've now had a proper lesson in how to tweak, squeeze, grope and massage breasts. Genius.
It was, and yet it's art, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. And we can make great boobs.
We can.
Wonderful.
More on the serious side of things, one of the ongoing features of the show was a giant seahorse cake being constructed live by Christine and Phil Jensen of Peborian for the Marine Conservation Society to raise awareness of ocean wildlife issues. I spoke with one of the folks from the Marine Conservation Society about the cake and the issues it represented.
I'm Richard Harrington from the Marine Conservation Society.
So yeah, he's coming around.
And we're looking here at a gorgeous cake in progress. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on?
Yes, it's a giant-sized replica of a seahorse, anatomically correct. So it's very exactly like you see a wild seahorse, just about 100 times bigger.
Very big, very big.
I remember seeing seahorses at an aquarium.
Very tiny. That's where most people see them, and yes, they don't grow very big. But this is a model of one that you do get in UK seawater. So it's a spiny seahorse, and they actually get to a good 15 centimetres tall when they're fully grown. So actually quite a big, and a fish. Not many people realise that a seahorse is a kind of fish, but a very beautiful one too. So the cake makers, Peborian, the company from Cornwall, so there are bakers who make wonderful cakes for weddings and special events. They came to us to say, well, we've got an idea for making some kind of marine-themed cake. I think that they were aware that there's a big natural history series on the television at the moment called Blue Planet, Blue Planet 2 by the BBC. And they said, what sort of things should we make? So we had a chat and just said, well, a seahorse is a wonderful animal, which is both beautiful and people love them, but also threatened. So all around the world, seahorse populations are unfortunately under threat, including in the UK, where their habitat is very vulnerable. So it just seemed like a very good fit.
What is it that's making the habitat threaten? Is it rising temperatures? Is it pollution? Is it habitat loss?
That's right. It's all three of those things, yes. So for seahorses in the North Atlantic, yes, there are pressures from habitats being damaged by fishing, for example, but also sea temperature rise. Is it affecting the habitats that they live on? So yes, multiple factors.
So, I mean, obviously we're at a cake show. We try to not be very polluting and environmentally minded. Uh-huh. But what could the average person listening to this podcast is uh-huh. a cake decorator. What can they do to help save seahorses?
Uh-huh. Well, so one of the things you can definitely do is to reduce the amount of plastic you use in your life in general, and certainly for those things that are just used once and then thrown away. So molds and templates that can be used again and again are definitely better than something that's a sort of a throwaway item after a single use. So that's definitely something we'd advocate. And also people can support our charity. So the Marine Conservation Society is a registered charity in the United Kingdom, and we do a lot of work to preserve the habitats for all sorts of species, including seahorses.
And so if people wanted to donate, where should they go?
To our website, which is at mcsuk.org.
We do use a lot of plastic wrap in our decorating, don't we? And we can't always avoid it, especially for health and safety reasons. I mean, sure, I can wash my Ziploc freezer bags for my own personal home use when they've just had a home-baked loaf of bread in them. But obviously, I don't wash the ones that have had meat in them. And further still, I'm never going to reuse any kind of wrapping for cakes or cookies or anything else that's leaving my kitchen for other people to eat. I use washable tubs for my family's dinner leftovers, but it's not realistic for any of us to give clients washable cake boxes. And when we store fondant or gum paste, it needs to be tightly wrapped, so it's not like we can just use a washable tub for that either, or else the stuff is going to harden in there, and then we have a food waste issue instead of a plastic waste issue. This stuff is hard. I mean, I love the excuse Richard gave us there to buy more high-quality, durable silicone molds and reusable stencils, but even that stuff comes in plastic that gets thrown away. Now, I do have a lot of friends who make tools in the cake industry. We've had the folks from Innovative Sugar Works on the show, you'll be hearing from Don Butler of Dinky Doodle Designs later in this episode, and I've reviewed products for Marvelous Molds and other companies on my blog as well. I wonder if those creative, bright folks can come up with even more ways we as decorators could reduce our use of throwaway plastics. So I'm issuing a wide open challenge to all Sugar Arts tool manufacturers to see what their companies can do about reducing the amount of waste in terms of packaging, again, respecting that they have legal constraints on those things a lot of the time, and further challenging those folks to examine the ways that sugar artists use throwaway items and have a think about ways those could be replaced by reusable ones. Like, there's the thing where you can take plastic wrap and put it over your fondant and then use a cutter on top to get a softened edge. I'd happily use some kind of durable, washable silicone or other substitute for plastic wrap there, but it has the challenge of needing to let that cutter through far enough for a clean cut without destroying the overlay that you're using. And I would love it if someone came up with a way to store fondant and gum paste without having to use plastic wrap. I would buy that. I think a lot of us would. In Carla Puge's demonstration, she showed us how she sculpts and smooths her modeling chocolate faces by using a doubled-up bit of plastic wrap with some softened modeling chocolate inside. She specified to be sure to use chocolate that matches the color of whatever you're smoothing, because when the plastic eventually gives way, you want to make sure you're not going to ruin the color of your working surface with whatever you've put in the plastic wrap. And watching her use that little handmade tool, it's easy to see how it really does work very well for her. I've many times done the trick of using matching fondant to smooth fondant, particularly to blend in seams. But I have to admit, Carla's method of putting that in the plastic wrap kept it together much better and did a much better job. But the last thing I want to do is find a reason to use more plastic wrap. So, I challenge those tool makers out there to examine the properties of that sort of handmade tool and give us a washable, reusable version. I'll buy it, I'll test it, and if it works, I'll promote it. And in the meantime, I just donated £10 to the Marine Conservation Society, and I'm asking all of my listeners to do likewise. There's a link in the show notes, or you can go directly to mcsuk.org/donate. The more each of us does, the better off seahorses and all marine life will be. It's time for a podcast helpful reminder. Are you working on a competition piece? Are you working on a client cake? When was the last time you checked the rules for your competition entry? When was the last time you read your client contract to make sure that you're spelling that name right? You're working really hard, I know, but every once in a while, you need to pause, go check that you're doing it right. Because you're an amazing artist, but we all make mistakes. So right now, if you can pause, go check what you need to do, make sure it fits in the space that it needs to go into, make sure everything's spelled right, and then get back to work, because you're awesome. I've posted several in-progress photos of that massive seahorse cake, and you can see it took a lot of internal structure work to make a cake of that scale happen. My dear friend Jackie Kelly of Totally Sugar did a demonstration at the show all about structure options, something she's an expert on, having made everything from her Lewis the Rabbit figure, who was best in show for Cake International London 2014, to gigantic cakes like a BFG head that was taller than she was. She spoke about making all kinds of internal structure bits food safe, starting with some good advice when it comes to the very basics that every baker has in their home kitchen.
The very first, most basic part of structure is a cocktail stick. I told you I'd start right at the beginning. So if you're making a model and you want to support, a cocktail stick literally is your best friend, except it's got two pointed edges. And if you're doing things for small children, you want to upgrade from the cocktail stick and you want to go lolly stick, especially for children's cakes. Because children understand when they see a lolly stick, they go, I know what that is, I recognize that. That's something nice. I can put it in my mouth, but I don't swallow it. And it's instantly spottable. So steer clear of the spaghetti. Dried spaghetti is as scratchy on your throat as a cocktail stick. Also, dried spaghetti inside your sugar paste model goes squishy because it absorbs all the moisture. So it's no more supportive than a pair of fagel knickers. So just don't go there.
Listen to Jackie. She knows what she's talking about. She's also super sweet and a great source of advice on all things structure. So if you ever get the chance to take one of her classes here in the UK or all over the world, don't miss it. In other exciting structure news, Dawn Butler of Dinky Doodle Designs and Cake Frame demonstrated the prototype of her forthcoming remote control car kit. She carved a cake onto the base as part of her demo, but as she explained, her intention is to have the kit come with a baking tray that makes the cake exactly to the shape you need to drop it right onto the food-safe frame over the base that covers the lights and battery pack. Here's an edited down version of her demo with all of the pertinent details of this exciting prototype in action.
So guys, we're all trying to push the boundaries of cake. We're all trying to make something a bit more exciting. Movement is now kind of in there. Lighting's sort of in there. We're all sort of doing something that is completely over the top, aren't we? Our customers are wanting more and we're having to really kind of go for it. Now, I don't know about you, but the problem with a remote control car is that it only deals with the weight and plastic shell that's empty. And it's not food safe. Which we need to kind of deal with, don't we? We need to make sure it is. There's something telling me you've dealt with that. I might have dealt with that. It has been 6 months in the making to make it powerful enough, to make it smart enough, to make it food safe, and to make it a retail ready kit. So I'm sharing this with you because I want all you good people to come help me. I need to know whether you'd be interested in this kind of kit. So I need to know whether I need to get 50,000 made or just 500.
Do you know what now? I know this is me going over the top. I'm just seeing that next year at Cake and Tasha we have a Grand Prix and we all make our own cakes and we come and race them.
Oh my God, that's so cool! I was thinking we could have cars sponsored by teams and I can be in the pit. I think it'll be cool.
I think we're in it. No, seriously, next year they're going to walk in and there'll be this whole Grand Prix set up and they say, oh, they were serious.
Yeah, no, absolutely serious. So actually this will seat a 9-inch by 7-inch cake, okay? Which is the size of a chunk. Size of a chunk that is away from anything that's not food safe. But what it will then come with is a food safe plastic tray. The food safe plastic tray will contain your lights.
We got lights.
They're not bad.
Do they work?
Do they work? What do you think, Rosie?
No, but do you have like the indicators as well?
Oh, indicators, hazard lights, reversing lights, brake lights.
Are you serious? I was joking there.
No. They're all there. So, all of that control can be. Basically, it will then also come with a food-safe disposable baking tray. Completely and utterly safe to pop in the oven and you can bake in it. You bake this shape in that oven and it will cook nice and evenly because I've got rid of the bonnet and the boot, so I've not, it's going to not burn at the ends and not suck cooking centre. So that's a nice even shape. And baking that, and that takes on, I don't know if you can see it from here, Rosie, but it's got all your contour lines for the windscreen and the windows. Right. They're all in there. So once you bake that, you would simply plop that on top. Now, because if I did that, the demo would be over in 30 seconds. I'll do some carving.
Good.
I would like to be able to retail this kit, folks, at around the £30 mark retail. You'll get everything that you need. So cost it out as part of the cake.
Wow.
The next phase, folks, is that we will work towards 4x4s. If you flip this platform over, it takes it from that low sword suspension to a higher 4x4 suspension. And then I'm going to be doing tractors, camper vans, Winnebagos.
You know, you say you can throw that tin away, it's disposable.
You can use it
can
again.
Can you use it
yeah.
again? Like that?
And the great thing is that because I've done it in a much cheaper, versatile plastic that's food safe, it means that I can sell those parts very differently. So I can sell you, you might have already got that and kept the bit, the bottom bit, but then all you need to buy then is just the other top. Yeah, and you can change it into that sports car or, you know, anything you like, really. There's not just the car, by the way. There's turning heads, there's revolving discs, there's lighting kits.
So we need Wi-Fi, that's all it is.
Yeah, so we've not designed an app, because an app would need to be written for both iPhones and Androids and everything else. So actually, this literally is just Wi-Fi enabled. They can literally just sign up to this and off it will kind of go.
What's the prognosis for when it's going to be out?
Well, basically, so we're off to China in December. I need to go to China to get it produced. You know the cake frame I've had made in the UK, and I'm really proud of that. But I need this as cheap as possible so that I can give it to you as cheap as possible so that we can mass produce it. I've gone to a very, very reputable company that I know and trust and love dearly. And basically, I go and see the samples are ready. And if the samples are like this, that you know we've given them to play with, then we should be able to go into manufacturing once we discuss their numbers.
Getting back to more traditional basics, Valerie Valeriano and Christina Ong of Queen of Hearts Couture Cakes demonstrated how to pipe a design onto parchment paper with buttercream and then transfer that to a buttercreamed cake. Once the design is on the cake, you can then pipe more buttercream to draw out the design, add buttercream flowers, and so on. They suggest that you ensure your cake is crumb-coated, then covered with another fresh coat of buttercream right before the transfer. And here, they explain why.
When you cover your cake, I mean, before you do that, you have just freshly covered your cake. Why?
Why? Because this is buttercream. When this is really dried up for a long time, it's not going to be transferred. Okay? There's no way that you're going to get the pattern in it. So the buttercream has to be freshly covered.
Yes, so to do that, then you basically, of course, don't forget your crumb coating. And then after that, you chill it first in your fridge, probably about 5-10 minutes, not overnight. Okay, just chill it for 5 minutes or 10. Touch the surface. When it's hard enough, take it out already. Because the moment that you put your cake inside in the fridge for far too long, even the inside of the cake will be really, really cold. And then as you take it out from the fridge, there's a drop in temperature, and that's when your condensation starts. So meaning they will be sweating. And water plus buttercream, they're not best friends. They're not very good friends, so you don't want that.
After their demo, they had these words of encouragement for anyone listening right now who is working hard on a cake late into the night.
What is your best tip for buttercream is going wrong in the middle of the night? How do they recover? How do you encourage them?
Put it in the fridge for now. Yeah, for a couple of minutes, let it settle, let it chill first, and then with some good music, dance the night off.
Get a cup of tea.
Yes, breathe in, breathe out, and pipe again.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Don't sleep on it.
But if you are looking for fondant, I spoke with a representative of one of the newest fondant brands on the market who had this to say about the product. And as a disclaimer, I did get a free sample, although I haven't had time to open that package yet.
Okay, so I'm here at the sugar paste stand, so tell me about the sugar paste.
Right, the sugar paste is from the Cake Decorating Company. It is palm oil free, vegan, gluten free, nut free, and it comes in white and ivory. it's really easy to colour. We recommend using the Roxy Rich Dusts because they're really, really easy to use. It doesn't tear, it doesn't get elephant skin, really nice to use, really smooth. It's got a slight vanilla flavour to it, and it's not too sweet either. Really, really nice to work with.
What do you think differentiates it from other pastes?
Personally, I have used every paste going, and I just find it that easy to kind of use. It's elasticity. I've iced a dummy cake over and over and over again with the same piece of icing.
I've been using the same piece all day. Wow.
And I take it off, knead it, and reuse it, and it's still really soft, really smooth. It's brilliant to work with. I've had no cracks, no elephant skin, and I can still mark it even now and still buff it out. And this piece has been iced for 2 hours.
That's amazing. Does it set hard at all, ever?
It will, yes. Okay. If you leave it overnight, you will get a crust to it, like you would a normal cake.
Right, so you could build figures.
You can build figures, yeah. And obviously, if you want it a bit firmer, you can add a bit of Tylose to it.
Cake International isn't just about regular cake. Some of the demonstrations were on other delicious treats, like Cheryl Beto's demonstration of floral jelly art and Karen Keeney's talk about chocolate biscuit Christmas pudding. I've seen floral jelly art a lot in the Texas cake decorating circles because it's very popular in Mexico, and in fact a lot of the books and videos I've seen on how to do it are in Spanish. Basically, you make a clear jelly base and then use syringes and sometimes specially shaped heads on the syringe to inject colored jelly in a controlled way that comes out as a flower or whatever else you want to make. Cheryl Beto says it's hugely popular in Asia as well, and spoke to me after her demonstration about how she got started in this, how it's typically used in Asian meals, and how to get started if you're interested.
How did you get into doing this in particular? Actually, I started with fondant cakes and whatnot, and then they have like all these one-off classes in my neighborhood, so I thought, like, okay, this looks interesting and I need to try it out. So I went to try it out, I kind of like it, and then I started to experiment on my own, and then I sort of got hooked with it, and then as I get along, people requested for me to teach it, and then I started teaching.
Snack, is this a dessert?
This is mostly an Asian dessert. So normally what they do is you put it in the fridge so that it's really, really cold, and then you take it out, and it has to be really sweet, right? And then after you have like your savory meal and whatnot, this is really refreshing.
So is it like a sweet jello?
Yes, it's like a sweet jello. Okay. Yes.
If someone wanted to get into this, because I've bought these tools, but I haven't used them yet.
All right.
But if someone wants to try this at the basics, where would you suggest they get started?
There are information that you can find online, and YouTube, there are plenty of tutorials. You can start that on your own, and then if you are really like keen on having like a more hands-on experience, then maybe you can sign up for classes and look for more information that way, because I always believe that when you want to learn something well, you need to take a class.
Karen Keeney's talk about chocolate biscuit Christmas puddings provided a really interesting alternative to standard cake that she said is very popular with weddings and other celebration cakes in her area of Ireland. She gave me permission to share the recipe with you, and I'll put it in the show notes. But the quick version is you melt 300 grams of chocolate. She uses 150 grams each of darkened milk, but said you can do any combination that suits your or your client's tastes. And then mix that with 100 grams of butter. She said some people use unsalted, but she prefers salted. Then you mix in 2 tablespoons of golden syrup, and I'm sure in the US corn syrup would work just fine since I substitute between those two for recipes all the time. That all comes together to make a base that's somewhere between a ganache and a candy. After that, everything's optional according to your tastes. Karen's recipe includes 130 grams of broken up biscuits, or what North Americans would call cookies. She used digestive biscuits, which are popular here in the UK and in Canada, but not something I ever saw when I lived in the US. So the closest substitution I can think of would be graham crackers. But you could probably use gingerbread or anything else that pairs well with the chocolate. You break up the biscuits or cookies and mix them in along with other stuff like marshmallows, Maltesers, again, Americans could substitute other chocolate candies, raisins if you like those, and even other flavorings like peanut butter, liqueurs, or other flavorings as desired. And while in her demo she then put this mixture into a pudding basin and let it firm up, then cut it like a cake, she talked about how you can line a regular cake pan with acetate, so you can mold this stuff into any shape you want. Then you can put fondant over it, just like a regular cake.
I love the smell, this is delicious. And lots of people at home use these for wedding cakes. They're very cost effective for brides and very easy for us cake makers because there is no baking and you usually don't have to ganache the outside of them if you're clever. So you get your tin, you line the bottom of your tin with a little bit of parchment. You know acetate, like strong acetate? can buy it in, well, a lot of actually cake shops are selling it now. They line your tin with the acetate, pour in your mixture, let it set, and if you've kind of bashed down your ingredients enough, the outside of the cake, once it comes out of the tin, should be pretty smooth and there's usually no need to ganache. What I would normally do is for a wedding cake, I would make a little bit extra of this mixture and just keep it to one side. So if I've got any holes that I need to fill afterwards, I can just gently melt this in the microwave and until it's about a Nutella consistency or a ganache consistency, and then just go in and fill in those holes. So that saves the need for making ganache. And you can just put sugar paste straight over this. No need to do anything else. Just a little tip, if you are making this for a wedding cake and you use marshmallows in there, the marshmallows have a tendency, you can see the marshmallow on this side, it's soft. So when you put the fondant or the sugar paste on top, you will see a little divot where that marshmallow is. So if you've got any marshmallows on the outside of a cake that you're covering completely in fondant, I just pick them out with a knife and fill in the gap, because it's really annoying when you've got your nice cake finish and you see this little bubble on the outside and you think, why is that? It's perfect. But it's the marshmallows. They'll do that to you. And I was saying it was cost effective for brides as well, because it's quite a solid cake, you can cut it small, really small slices, and it's very rich. Like at the end, we're going to chop this up and you can have a taste of it and see what you think.
And I did have a taste of it. It is very rich. And like I said, it's between a cake and candy. I mean, you're kind of made a ganache modeling chocolate sort of base with all of those other fillings in it. And so what you're getting, it's candy cake like. So you would cut it thinner and you would serve smaller pieces. I liked it. It was a little sweet for my taste, but that's because I really just preferred dark chocolate. So I'm actually considering doing some kind of dark chocolate, maybe even a chocolate cookie version for my family this Christmas. On Sunday, the newly crowned Cake Artist of the Year 2017, Emma Jane, demonstrated how to make some of the poppy she'd put around her amazing warhorse cake. As part of that, she and her partner talked about how difficult it was to get the warhorse out of their house for the show, and what they planned to do with it afterwards.
So we live in a mansion, with 16 bedrooms. Now we got a real small house, and the warhorse was built in the conservatory. Sadly, the dimensions wouldn't allow the horse to come into our house, just in the conservatory. So all the doors are left open to keep the temperature throughout the whole house exactly the same. So the horse.
So in other words, we've had to freeze for the sake of a horse being in our house. How long has it taken to make the horse?
2 weeks.
2 weeks of freezing in your conservatory. And tell the ladies and gentlemen how many people it took to get it over your fence. Because you could get it out of your conservatory, yeah, but not through the gate.
Yeah. We had 12 people together, 10 lifting, and one holding a tree back, one holding the gate open, etc. Yes, we had to go out of the conservatory, down a nice path, which is very easy, then up and over a fence.
The fence is not a fence like this, though, is it?
No, it's
very, very tall, the fence. Has anyone seen Emma's wedding dress as well? Have you seen the wedding dress? There are photos of you carrying the wedding dress over the fence. Did you take some of the horse as well? Or was everybody needed underneath it?
Well, actually, we got halfway down the path and I was underneath and I said, hold horse, hold horse. But luckily, his mum was taking photos of the horse. So.
Brilliant, so they're there.
Yeah. We're trying to find a home for the horse.
Oh, that would be nice.
Yeah, so the war horse theatre show was going around the country, so we're trying to get contacts with that to see whether it could be used for that. We're just trying to find anywhere where it can go, because it needs to be seen. If not, it's going to be destroyed.
That sounds bad.
Yeah.
That sounds really bad.
I can't keep a horse in the house.
That's what no, I can't get it to go over the fence.
No horse in the house.
It's out the fence now, that's it.
And during her demo, I asked her the same question I'd asked so many others about what challenges her and how does she rise to that.
Anything that is difficult, for instance, every November, well, for the last 4 years, actually, Rose is gonna, we've been invited to come back and make some sort of big exhibit for you guys to see. And what I want to do, I want to push the boundaries of what can be done with sugar, because it's an amazing thing to use to make creative things. So what pushes me is, what haven't I done, and what is in my mind what I want to create? I want to go a little bit further every time. Now, between us, we're already discussing next year. So you're not next year. We may be divorced by next year. Maybe. But next year, we're hoping, because one day I've got to retire from doing all these big things to let someone else come in and have a go doing these wonderful big exhibits. Isn't it, Rose, do you think? But if I'm going to go, let's go with a bang. So that's what pushes me, is that I just want to show people what can be done with sugar.
By the end of the 3-day show, everyone was exhausted. And of course, all I've been able to share with you here is merely a tiny fraction of the amazing stuff going on there. If you can ever make it to the November Cake International Show, I'd encourage you to do so, because it is a huge and internationally renowned show for good reasons. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode for lots of photos of the demonstrations I featured, the competition cakes I loved, and more. The URL should be in the podcast description, but just in case, it's eat-the-evidence.com/podcast/episode-15, and that's the number 15. If you've learned anything new in this episode, or were even just entertained as you worked on a project of your own, please share it with your friends, and remember to go to the Marine Conservation Society's website to donate. Again, that's mcsuk.org. I think it's only fitting to give the last word to the amazingly kind and endlessly funny Rosie Cake Diva.
Okay, so we're almost done. What are you doing tonight?
I'm driving home tonight, which I'm a bit worried about, because to be honest, my feet kill. It's one of those where I'll be there with the pedals and trying to take the pressure off my feet. It's been a long day for standing. It's been a long weekend for standing. I have probably about a 3-hour drive, maybe 2 hours. Maybe. It depends on the traffic. And the amount of 50-mile-an-hour zones that you have to go down the motorway on the M6. Don't even start me. But no, it has been an amazing weekend. One of the difficulties is it's been an incredible weekend with so many highs that it's actually hard to calm down and go to sleep. Yeah. So we had the Cake Master Magazine Awards last night. It was a huge success. It was such a good night. I didn't want to go to bed. The only reason I went to bed was because I knew I had to wake up in the morning. So I wasn't tired. It's hard to get to sleep. It's hard to calm down. Everybody here is meeting each other, enjoying the time together, and it's hard to come down from that. So I think Sunday will be a bit of a sink in the stomach. It's all over for another year, and just get home and have a little bit of rest for one day.
For one day, yes.
And back in.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links, as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
About the portal.
what's really difficult, saying anything to do with cakes and icing, it's all about balls and sausages.